We're going to begin today's service by singing number 871.
The Bible reading this morning will come from John, the 18th chapter, verses 33 through 38. Then Pilate entered to the judgment hall again and called Jesus and said unto him, Art thou the King of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done? Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight, that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. Pilate therefore said unto him, Art thou a king then? And Jesus answered, Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Pilate saith unto him, What is truth? And when he had said this, he went out again unto the Jews, and saith unto them, I find in him no fault at all.
Good morning. Just thanks for everybody's presence this morning. It's good to be here, and it's appreciate as we continue on with our study about night scenes in the Bible. As Mike mentioned last week, this week mine's going to pick up the kind of the second half of that evening, that Thursday evening, and going to try to get through the garden, the arrest, and trials. I think Mike kind of mentioned it a little bit last week. It's like until you start studying this night, you don't realize how much is quite there as far as, you know, there's just even small segments of this night that you could spend a great deal of time over and going over. One of the things that I'd mentioned if for those that are in the adult class on John, when we were talking about that a couple weeks ago, or I guess last week when we were talking about the trial before Pilate, and kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but I think one of the things that stands out about this evening, to me anyways, as you go through it, is just the interaction, not just with how Jesus acts, but how the people around him act. And I think that's one of the things, hopefully, as we go through this morning a little bit and talk about these various points of the evening, that we'll talk about that just a little bit and kind of look at that and keep that in mind as far as how, not only how Jesus is reacting or how he acts, but also how those around him act. And I think it's and I'll have to tell you, I'll mention it here. I was going to mention it in the Bible class, but you can kind of get yourself caught up a little bit at times when you're studying on something. It's like if you just study on this evening and this evening only, it can be a fairly depressing study because you kind of, but it was kind of funny because I would be studying for this lesson. And then I'd be studying about what we're going to talk about in the class, and it's kind of like, I don't know if there's any two different extremes of emotions that you can have, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in class. But as we get started, I want to talk about the garden. It's related in all of them. Actually, John, who we've been studying, is mentions it the least, but you can see the list of the verses that, and we won't read all of those this morning, but we will turn over and just pick and choose a little bit as we go through this morning, but you can see the account, the verses that are listed, and I think if you look at the total, I think there's only about 30 or so verses of the garden scene if you counted them all up. But we'll look over in Mark chapter 14, and looking at this, and in Mark chapter 14, we'll read verses 32 through 42, and but first, before I get to that, I just want to make mention, too, that Jesus does tell them of their upcoming stumble and also of Peter's denial as he goes or as they get to this garden. But in Mark chapter 14, beginning in verse 32, it says, Then they came to a place where was named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, Sit here while I pray. And he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. Then he said to them, My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch. He went a little farther and fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible that the hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. Then he came and found them sleeping and said to Peter, Simon, are you sleeping? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Again he went and prayed and spoke the same words. And when he returned, he found them again asleep. He found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. Then he came to them a third time and said to them, Are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. And like I said, before they get to this point, Jesus has already told them that they are all going to stumble that evening. He also predicts Peter's denial. And we'll mention that as we go through, but not really spend much time on Peter's denial. But there's two things that I wanted to kind of point out. One is that idea that he does call out in the Gospels, that he takes Peter, James, and John a little bit further than he does the other disciples. And I think one of the accounts mentions it's on kind of a stone's throw and a little deeper than the rest. But then he also expresses to them how deeply sorrowful that he is and how his heart, and we've talked about that in our study in John, but how he's talking here about how my soul is exceedingly sorrowful in verse 34 and what a distress he was under. And now again, I can't, you know, you can't account for, you know, how tired they were and what all and what they understood about that evening and what he was fixing to go through. Obviously, they didn't know what was about to happen, and he did. But then the other thing about this evening and about this prayer, and again, you can spend a whole sermon and many sermons, I guess, in talking about what that prayer means and the three times he prayed it, let this cup pass from me. But I'll simply say for the study this evening so that we can get through to other things, I think that in the what Jesus prays in the garden, I think he shows his full deity and he shows his full humanity. And the fact that we talked about this in our study, and I keep referring back to that, and I apologize if you're not in that study, but the fact is that throughout the gospel accounts, Jesus makes it very clear that his will and the Father's will, he was going to do the Father's will no matter what. He knew the God's plan. He prays that prayer and understand the distress that he was under. We've talked about that before as far as having known what was going to happen and how sometimes we might think that we want to know what's going to happen in our lives or have that idea of what's going to happen tomorrow. But when we stop and think about it, not really. We might want to know the good things, but we definitely don't want to know the bad. But Jesus knew all things here, and he knows that. And I think what he shows, if there's any question at all about Jesus being all God or all God or all deity, and if there's any question about Jesus being all man, I think that is answered in his prayers and how he responds. And at the end of the day or at the end of that evening, you know, he says, nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will be done. And so here we see the garden, and then going on to the, and still in the garden, then we see the betrayal, the arrest, and desertion part of the evening. There are the accounts that are mentioned in the four Gospels. And first and foremost, we know that Judas, the betrayer, brings a mob to arrest Jesus that evening. Judas betrays, and again, if you stop and think about, you know, the signs, if he could have pointed out to him, you know, could have pointed him out to the mob or any kind of way that he could have signified who he was, who Jesus was, but he does it with a kiss. I mean, again, if you think about someone you've been very close to and disappoints you, but take that even, you know, infinitely more here, that you have someone who you've taught and you've worked with for 3 years and that you've taken closely, that you chose, has betrayed you. And not only when he does that, he does it again with a kiss. Let's, before we look at John 18:8, let's read the account here, at least a part of this account, in Luke chapter 22. In Luke chapter 22, beginning in verse 47, there it's recorded, says, and when he was still speaking, behold, a multitude, and this is Luke 22:47, while he was still speaking, behold, a multitude, and he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? When those around him saw what was going to happen, They said to him, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And one of them struck the servants of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus answered and said, Permit even this. And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, captains of the temple, and the elders who had come to him, Have you come out against me as a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not try to seize me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. So we see here that Jesus asked him simply there in that part that we just read, he asked them why they hadn't done this during the day. And we talked about that. We've talked about that, and it's, you know, throughout the Gospels and really throughout the Bible, but in the Gospels, you know, light and darkness are compared. And you see that this travesty is done. It has to be is done at night. And we've talked about that as far as how that, you know, when sin and most of the time, you know, more wickedness happens in the evenings or in the shadows and things of that nature. And you see that this evening is going to be no different. We made that, you know, even when Judas left, it, you know, the comment that's made in John that Jesus went into the, or Judas went into the dark. Or left into the dark to when he went to do this deed earlier in the Gospels. But we see here that he asked simply, you know, that they wouldn't do it during the day. But then we also, and I kind of got that a little bit out of order, but that John 18:8 is just simply there that even at this point where he's being arrested, Jesus doesn't forget his friends. And John 18:8, he simply asks, he says, Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he, therefore if you seek me, let these go their way. And that the saying, verse 9, that the saying might be fulfilled, which he spoke, of those whom you gave me, I have lost none. So again, we see that idea that Jesus asked for them to be spared, and we know that they were. And then probably one of the saddest statements here about the disciples is Matthew 26:56, and also in Mark 14:50. It just simply says that they all forsook him and fled. So here at his greatest hour, you know, Peter just earlier had, you know, said he would stand with him to the end and actually had drew a sword and had cut off. And we know by the other account, not in the account we read, but in the other gospel accounts, we know that that was Peter that had pulled the sword out and cut off the servant's ear. But yet, Jesus knew, and you can imagine, I guess, the confusion that they would have had when Jesus wasn't ready to fight. And so at this moment, in just a few moments from drawing a sword, to just a few moments later, they're ready to flee. And so we see that that's how Jesus is led from the garden and then the arrest with the Jewish officials. And then we're going to go through the trials that he has, and there's several of these, and I'll try to go through these just to make a couple of points about each one. The first is examined by Annas. Jesus defends here in John, he defends what he has taught openly. And then also, we'll just turn over there to John chapter 18. In John 18, verses 12 through 14, jumped down to 19 through 23. It says, the high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. And Jesus answered him, I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in the synagogues and in temples where the Jews always met. And in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand. And do you answer the high priest like that? Jesus answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me? Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And so again, we see, or just to mention that he, you know, again, Jesus defends openly, you know, defends what he had been speaking about openly, that he'd made no secret about this, that, you know, of what he was and what he had said, he'd done it in front of everybody. And then we see that just the very tip of the iceberg as far as the abuse that's going to happen this evening is this open hand slap to Jesus and this starts. And I'll make point of this too, that as we go through here and we go to Caiaphas and the council, I want to make sure to mention that it wasn't even legal for them to meet at night. And so this was in no ways considered a formal meeting of the council, the Sanhedrin council, because it was not even legal for them to meet in the dark. But again, from this point of being examined by Annas, Then he goes before Caiaphas and the council. Again, it's recorded throughout the gospel accounts and all the synoptics and even in John briefly. It says, but several things here that they seek false witnesses against Jesus. They finally, and as they finally find a couple of false witnesses, then Jesus finally breaks his silence in Matthew chapter 26, in verse 64. Jesus here says, and we'll back up to verse 63. It says, but Jesus kept silent, and the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, it is as you said. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming of the clouds. Then the high priest tore his clothes. He has spoken blasphemy. What further need do we have of witnesses? Look now, you have heard his blasphemy. So again, if we read on there, he goes, and this is where they really, although they've been plotting to kill him for some time, with the statement that he's just made there, like I said, recorded there in Matthew 26 and also in Mark 14:62, that they're going to put him to death. And then we can move over again, with this in this scene that the abuse has continued. In Luke records in Luke chapter 22, in verses 63 through 65, it says, now the men who held Jesus mocked him and beat him. And having blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, prophesy, who is the one who struck you? And many other things they blasphemously spoke against him. And I think it's interesting to note that the very thing that they were accusing him of blasphemy was what they were doing to the Lord. And again, the abuse has continued here. But then I'm just going to mention it because, again, this is a whole sermon in and of itself. But at this point, most of the Gospels in chronological order, they record the denials of Peter. Again, we're not going to go into that this morning just for sake of time. But then we come back to being condemned by the council, and really in all the accounts that we've read, we'll look at this. Jesus simply at the end of Luke chapter 22, in Luke 22 and verses 66 through 71, he simply tells them what they don't want to hear. In 67 through 61, it says, as soon as it was the day, the elders of the people, both chief priests and scribes, came together and led him into their council, saying, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will by no means believe. And if I ask of you, you will by no means answer me or let me go. Hereafter, the Son of Man will sit on the right hand of the power of God. Then they all said, are you the Son of God? So he said to them, you rightly say that I am. And they said, what further testimony do we need? For we have heard it ourselves and from his own mouth. So again, they simply weren't going to accept the truth no matter what he did. And so their plans had already been made. At this point, most of the gospel accounts then record, at this point, Judas has realized what's going to happen. As it realized that he hasn't just sold the Lord to these officials. For them to beat him or discourage him or whatever the case might be. At this point, Judas realizes that what he's done is going to cost the Lord his life. And so Judas takes, unlike Peter, in his account of the denials and going to weep and bitterly, Judas takes his own life. Then we come to the first appearance before Pilate. Pilate questions him, and this is what Brother Paul Rose read for us this morning. Pilate questions Jesus and finds no fault in him. Then, when he realizes he's from Galilee, he takes him to Herod, and Jesus before Herod. And I think it's interesting that Herod, here it's recorded in Luke chapters 23, 6 through 12. The reason that Herod wanted to see him was that he had heard many great things about him, and he was hoping that Jesus would do some miracle for him. And I think it's interesting to note here, Jesus utters not a word to him. Absolutely nothing is recorded that Jesus even spoke to him or said anything to him. So Herod was expecting to see some great thing or some marvelous thing or whatever the case might have been, and Jesus doesn't even speak to him. But Herod and his men, they continue the verbal abuse, and that's in Luke chapter 23. We'll look at that briefly. Verse 11 says, then Herod with his men of war treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in the gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. That very day, Herod and Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other. But then the second appearance before Pilate, and again, we've just talked about this for those that were in the class on John. We've talked about this quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. But Pilate and his soldiers continue the abuse, and this is where it really steps up. At this point, most of the abuse has been more verbal and just, you know, mild physical abuse, if you want to call it that. But here at the beginning of John chapter 19, so Pilate took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe, and then they said, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they struck him with their hands. Pilate then went out, and again just said to them, "Behold, I'm bringing him out to you, that you may know him, that I find no fault, that I bring him, Hail, King of the Jews. Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him." And we talked about that when we were studying this passage, that you almost get the idea that maybe Pilate thought to appease these Jews, if he beat him, you know, close to death, that that might appease them. So you can imagine what his body, and we talked about that this scourging that the Romans would have been done with a leather whip that had several tentacles to it, and at the end of those straps would have been either bone or glass or some type of shard metal or something like that that would inflict. And in fact, of what little bit I read about that, that a lot of times that they would, when the scourging by Roman soldiers was so severe that a lot of the time, the prisoner would die from blood loss just in that part of the abuse and would not even get to the crucifixion. But even with that being said, Pilate repeatedly states he finds no fault in Jesus. But then in chapter 19:11, that I just want to mention before we leave that, is in 19:11, Jesus mentions to him or shows him who has the real power. It says, 19:11 says, you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered you to me has the greater sin. And then again, Pilate goes on to, you know, offer up Barabbas, and that when that fails, then he goes on and gives him over to be crucified. But what I wanted to mention, just in briefly, I'm just about out of time, but a few things that I wanted to just to kind of make application of about this evening, and maybe some of this even goes back to what Mike said last week. I came across this idea, and I thought, well, okay, I can kind of get that. Is that the fact is that, you know, that when I said that about Jesus, and I understand where this kind of goes as far as, you know, to understand what I said earlier about the Gethsemane for Jesus showed his full humanity and his full deity. At that point, though, there is some ways in which Jesus' answer to that evening was to pray and obey God. And so in that way, I think that we can sometimes, we can think about our own lives and think about, you know, that we'll all face in some ways. Maybe it's the first time before we first obeyed the gospel, or maybe it's just we come to some critical point in our lives where our faith is tested ultimately. It may be the loss of a loved one. It may be, the failure of our friends or someone really close to us. But I think we all at some point and maybe several times in our lives will face our own Gethsemane. And will we pray and obey like Jesus did? And how will we react when we are wronged? Again, we read briefly a few parts of that evening and from the garden to his arrest and trials, and really no one did Jesus right that evening. Even his closest friends, you know, deserted him that evening. And how will we react? Will we stand firm in our beliefs no matter what? And again, are we going to face an evening like Jesus did? Probably not. But, you know, when hard times come and our friends desert us and things are not going as they should for us, how are we going to react to that? And then finally, will we remember who holds the real power? No matter how bad it gets, will we turn to God in prayer and obey him? And then finally, just the fact is, we know what Jesus did, and our goal as Christians is simply to be Christ-like. And so that's why I thought of just, as we brought these 2 weeks of talking about that that evening of Jesus, we know how this story ends, and it ends in victory. And I just thought to, you know, at least give a little bit of an idea, some applications, and just some thoughts to try to summarize these last 2 weeks. So That's what I had, and that's our. I'm a little bit over time. I didn't see who had the closing. Randy, would you lead us in a closing prayer, and then we'll be dismissed to our classes.